Ladies and gentlemen, ladies and ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, let's skip.
Go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Down in Front. This week we're talking about the documentary picture, The People vs. George Lucas, and things related to it. My name is always T. Christie, and I'm sitting here next to Eddie the Eddie Doty.
That's me.
And Brian William Finifter.
Greetings.
Michael Dorkman Scott.
Guilty.
And Sheree the Amazing Stokes.
Jury's still out.
Now, we've all five of us seen the movie, right? Have we all seen it? I know Eddie's seen it.
Yeah.
We all square on this?
Okay.
Now, it was
Netflix.
Funny because, unless I'm mistaken, I started
Netflix.
This trend on accident the other day by I idly clicked play on Netflix because, okay, whatever. I have stuff to work on and I need something to listen to, so this is there. And I tweeted, God, you just can't watch a Star Wars documentary anymore without seeing people you know in it. And in truth, I know, like, I have met like 10 people in this documentary, and I'm friends with like 4 of them. So it's creepy on that level. But as a movie together, it takes the odd angle of accusing George Lucas of sucking, which I thought was really refreshing. I found that to be an interesting diversion from what we've been hearing for the last 15 years. And if you haven't seen it, we're not going to spoil anything. At the end of the day, George Lucas makes the prequels. And but one thing about the ending that I thought was interesting was that all these people that have been basically, to varying degrees, shitting on George Lucas for 70 minutes or however long it is, at the end, they go back to every single talking head and they have a piece of footage of them saying, yeah, but I still love George Lucas. I can't even help. So at the end of the day, I thought it was kind of milquetoast. I think it's a little bit of, it's very common ground for everyone here, but I can imagine it being something that would open up, you know, your cousin's eyes if he's not that into Star Wars and be like, oh, I didn't know that was even a thing. Yep, sure is. Apparently, it's the only thing, because for 10 years now, we've been saying this shit, and I still don't care that much. But I thought it was fine, but I'm not the guy who knows how documentaries work, nor am I the editor. So when Eddie comes on and starts shitting really hard on this movie, he's right, and I'm wrong.
And here we go.
Talk about setups. Well, and that doesn't mean anything in terms of right or wrong, but you're wrong. And the reason being is that it's the gentleman who recently did the YouTube thing where he says he does a what if on episode one where he says what if it did this and he proposed to me that was far more entertaining of value. No, the guy who is a kid who basically said episode one doesn't work because of this. They could have done this and it would have worked great. It's a what if it was
right.
Called.
It was what if Star Wars episode one was actually good.
Yeah.
That's the title and
they reverse engineered it from there.
Right. And it's I mean, like you say, it's more constructive.
More concise. It's just let's put this on the table right now. There's a difference between a documentary and a polemic. And there's nothing wrong with doing a polemic. Michael Moore has been doing them for apparently beginning of time. But this is not a film. Like, I want to make that clear. This is not a piece of cinema, like, at all. It is people, I just feel like we've been
whining.
Over this point, whining, and we've been over this so goddamn much. And not to tune down a front's horn, but I think people like Red Letter Media, and I think, like, what you guys have done on the prequel work is more constructive, more healthy, more productive overall, more concise, more articulate than just the bullshit of watching Chris Gore go on and on, like, and not only that, but just leveraging their own sort of work in there as well. And yes, fine, fan films, great. We all come from fan films, and some really, just overall, get the fuck over it. It's movies. You like 3 of them, you hated 3 others. Done. End of discussion. Like, we can. I think by this point we've come around on the point of why they don't work, why they were created, why they're inferior. Like, it's been done. It's 2012.
Right, but you know, like, I mean, the question I would ask and what interested me was this movie, not to step on like your thing about it, but just to address
means,
it.
Yeah.
This movie was much less of a polemic than I thought it would be.
That's my reaction too. I thought, wow, that was a lot more balanced.
Because you look at it from the perspective of, and I get it, from the perspective of we have been having these conversations for the last 10, 12 years. I think that it originally certainly started as a polemic, the way the guy who made it, Alejandro, or however you pronounce his name. Sorry, I've only seen it written. But he... he kind of advertised it as being like, we're putting George Lucas on trial.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah,
that was, I didn't feel like that was present. I felt that
not at all.
That the documentary, so to speak, kind of evolved into being more about the weird relationship that the people, the fans, have with George Lucas. I don't think it evolved all the way to the point of... I think there was still a little bit too much polemic in it,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to being strictly balanced, but... Looking at it from the perspective of, here's the weird relationship between George Lucas and his fans, yeah, we're tired of hearing about that because we've been hearing about it for 12 years. We live in that world, but putting that world out to a broader audience, yeah. Isn't that the purpose of a documentary?
Yeah,
that
was my take on it, too. It's like, why go over this all over again? It's like, well, you make a documentary to introduce a topic
to people
that people aren't aware of it. So it's like there are... People in the world, in fact, I would venture to say most people in the world don't know there's a controversy about Han shot first.
Yeah.
Us and our little weird, incestuous, horrifying group.
We're tired of hearing about it.
Totally. It's the same argument as like, what? Why do they say Community's low rated? Everyone watches it.
But let me
everyone
ask you,
you know watches
yeah, okay.
it.
Okay.
You but, and six people watch
but,
it.
But the difference is, the difference is in this, that this documentary doesn't really take this form of, okay, here's a thing that people care about that you may not know. People actually don't really like Jar Jar Binks, and here's why. It's in those moments when it's doing that, it's just people bitching about Jar Jar Binks and Han and Greedo shooting
like
first.
Like I say, it doesn't make clear enough the fact that it's like this. This is the. It's not like a Comic-Con documentary where it's saying this is this weird little world
yes.
that people live in.
Yeah.
This is you know we're and
here's
and
this here's
you,
this
the
world
outsider.
Here's painting this picture
yeah.
of it.
You
yeah.
the presumptive outsider.
Right.
Here's what it's like to be in this relationship between a fan and George
right.
Lucas.
Well, I would just submit that like it, I mean a good example of how this could have been done is this film was not yet rated because that is a movie made for probably. People who are not as aware of the work of the MPAA does
sure.
and this extent of it. We have all had the same conversation about the MPAA and how silly it is. And that's a conversation I've heard just as much as Who Shot First. Yet when I watch this film is not yet rated, I still gain something out of it. I still feel like I hear both sides through archival footage of and yes, I know they use archival footage or blah, whatever. I'm saying is that a good filmmaker like Kirby Dick, and I'm not trying to besmirch Alexandre or whoever. That's the difference between someone who is experimenting with the documentary form and someone who it's his craft that they know how to present the information. The information has to flow a certain way. It has to not have. And again, Morgan Spurlock is doing different things in his films, which is why I feel like in the Comic-Con documentary it gets a little repetitive because he doesn't quite hit those beats yet. You know. Kirby Dick knows how to present those ideas. This film, I'm not saying that this couldn't have been a good film. I'm just saying it isn't. It's okay. not.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it fails a certain. It fails a Plinkett test. I'm just gonna say it like it just okay. And the documentary version of a Plinkett test. Character people come in and out. Ideas are roughly clumped together, but there's no flow.
Is your problem?
I agree with Eddie on this.
So your problem with it is, and I'm not necessarily disagreeing, I'm just
yeah,
clarifying,
no, yeah, yeah.
Your problem with it is that, is just that it's poorly constructed, not necessarily with the underlying, see as the underlying
when
thesis
the film
of it
is
ultimately?
Poorly constructed, and I say this because I've made the same mistake myself, because I've made feature documentaries, and it's an easy trap to fall into, because after a while, you're staring at the same fucking talking heads, you tend to clump and group. And it's more like a string of pearls. Like you have a chunk of story and very little connective tissue.
Yeah.
And because of that, it accentuates the whininess.
Yeah, I agree
you know
with
what I
that,
mean?
Actually, like, because it was very much a case
true,
of...
Like, here's 18 people who are going to say bad things about Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah.
Boom,
and
boom,
then
boom,
here's
boom,
another
boom,
18 people saying things
yeah.
about Who Shot First.
Now, there's,
you know?
And, but
yeah.
there's certainly issues in terms of what the documentary is about, because this film is not yet rated... is a way to introduce you to the MPA rating systems. What the documentary is about a guy on a hunt to try and figure out how the MPAA works.
Right.
So
right.
there's a narrative structure that's built in.
Oh.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Exactly.
No, that's the issue.
Exactly.
There's no underlying narrative structure
no
to the People
to
versus
this.
George Lucas.
Exactly. But they had one.
Yeah.
The People versus George Lucas.
Is
they could
perfect.
Have,
it's easy.
That would have been perfect because yeah. then you could have had the defense or whoever you structure as the defense be the advocate for why George does this stuff, and that way you
Roger
avoid
and me
the
is
ending.
Very much a polemic, but it's about I'm trying to get an interview with
it's
Roger.
It's that's, a hero. Yeah. It's still a hero's journey. Exactly. Like it's still you know the call to adventure. Flint, Michigan has gone down the shithole. Like it still follows those same beats that we're used to. You know, when reality TV works,
it still follows a story structure.
Exactly. Yeah. When reality TV works at its best, it does the same shit. You know, I did my senior thesis on that very same thing, that those same narrative structures have to exist in documentary, whether it's nonfiction or fiction. You have to have a structure, a narrative structure, and an arc. This movie has no arc. It's just a list of things we hate.
Yeah.
Is it shot well? Sure. Nah. I guess. I'm trying to.
Yeah.
Generous,
okay.
You know? Like,
it's not shot brilliantly. It's shot perfectly competently.
It's functional. It's functionally shot. They know how to light.
Yeah. Which Great. Is more than yeah. you can say from some documentaries.
I'm mostly on Eddie's side on this. Although for me, I feel like it's 80% whining and polemic and that just like the rehashing the same stuff we have been dealing with forever. But there are moments where it starts to approach some kind of depth and interesting. Like, okay, let's look at what George Lucas's side of this is, and he is the author, and he's the author of all of this, and so therefore, what is his responsibility, if any, to these fans, and what responsibility do they have? What is that relationship?
I came out of it.
It keeps like skipping along these things, and then it dives right back into Jar Jar Binks sucks.
Yeah, I came out of it actually more sympathetic towards George Lucas.
Oh, absolutely.
Than I did going in, but I was like, I don't know. Like you said, it's like because there's no narrative thread or anything, it's like I don't know exactly what I'm feeling. I just know that I'm less angry at him at the end of it all. You know,
there is some really interesting stuff that's proposed, at least in passing. I mean, the whole idea of, yes, George Lucas started out as this kid from Northern California that was raging against the machine and wanted to bring down the evil empire, who then turned into the evil empire himself.
Right.
That's really interesting character. Let's explore that a little more.
Well, something else.
But then it dives back into
something that
made me
think about, just as a broader context. It's like we talk about, you know, we're like, well, you should just leave that, you know, the way it was and stuff like that. But I'm like, we're in a world now where, you know, that people are getting in trouble for stuff they post on Facebook because they get Googled before they you know,
Before
they get the job and stuff like that. And it's like, isn't that almost the same thing? Like, there was a time where, like, being creative, being an artist, you're putting yourself out there, right? And you're saying, this is what I believe about certain things, you know, in the world right now. And then later on, I feel like maybe the coming generations are going to get more sympathetic to the kind of where Lucas is coming from, at least, because it's like before it used to be, well, that's the work of, you know, that's the work of a young man, and it's just out there, and that's just what I had to deal with as an artist. I put that out there and I can't take it back. And now Lucas kind of wants to take it back a little bit. It's like, how would people really feel if their Facebook post from when they were 15 got printed out and put on the wall of a museum, and everyone's like, oh, it's brilliant, and stuff like that. And then when you're 40, you're looking at it and you're going, God, just, can we just get this down?
Or,
I don't want to have to look at this anymore.
Or you publish something brilliant at 40, and then somebody goes back and goes, check out this guy's Facebook post at 15, and it's
the most
a horrible trite.
He's obviously a hack.
Or again, you know, you publish something at 15, and you know, everyone thinks it's great and stuff like that, and then you grow, and when you're 30, 35, you're like, that's idiocy. I can't believe that everyone is into this because that's drivel, and I don't even agree with it anymore. You know?
What would have been really interesting, I think, is to take because there are a lot of artists and filmmakers and writers in all from various fields interview. In that, it would have been really interesting for the filmmaker to go, okay, can I see like your earliest stuff?
Yeah,
the very first thing that you ever published or put out there in the world.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah. How would you feel if I put that in this documentary unaltered?
These are all wonderful points that really would have gone well in the documentary. Yeah. You know, what
they,
I mean?
Like they almost tried to
they
do
get
that.
There. They what, get what, to the precipice.
What made me, what made me almost make that connection in a way, and what you're saying is Chris Strumpolis with his Raiders thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like he's almost the opposite of Lucas because he's not he's just embracing. He's like, we're kids, and it's totally embarrassing, but it's also neat, and I'm embracing the fact that people love this for what it is. I'm not going to go back in and try and recut it. I'm not going to shoot inserts for it or anything. It's like this. So he's doing the opposite of what Lucas is in in this in almost this exact context.
Yeah. It occurs to me that part of the problem, I think, a large part of the problem for me is the. Specifically some of the people that they interview for, because I think not just the choices themselves, but they needed more people. They needed better. They needed some people who contemporaries of George, not just archival interviews with Francis, but let's get some actual filmmakers in there as well. And I'm nothing against Chris Gore or Nar Williams, but like
the closest we got was Neil Gaiman, who was mostly on Lucas's side.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So, let's just say,
but yeah, as any grown up would be.
Yeah,
yeah
and that's the thing. This documentary really, and I don't think it intends to, but it's kind of boils it down for you. Going, this is kids versus the adults, and these are kids
exactly
kind of whining and feeling entitled. And we've kind of touched on
it
this.
It even
in
says
other,
that at one point. One of the people talking is I can't remember what his name is, but he basically says, you know. It's like, oh, he's making movies like they're for children. It's like, well, you're acting like children.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you were children when you saw the first ones and you loved them.
Yeah, we talked about the Comic-Con doc. Like, people have been trying to get Comic-Con docs off the ground for years and have released their own independent ones. And I know a girl who did that. And then I remember a couple years ago going there and seeing a booth and like the Comic-Con documentary from the fans' perspective, and which basically means it was shot on like a cell phone camera,
which means like no one ever's gonna want to see that.
Well, no. And so I watched. They had it on TV playing, and I looked down, and they were interviewing some dude from a booth, and of course I recognized the guy in the booth. But like it was some guy in a booth describing who drinks the different colors of Mountain Dew, how Asians mostly drink the blue kind. And Hispanics seem to like Code Red.
I want
to
just knock that TV over.
Exactly. Which the table is what my reaction to the people versus George Lucas
just
was.
Tore the lid off the whole Mountain Dew color controversy.
It's like, man, you're really cracking the code.
Someone's got to get that out
there. But they're
the
like, but it was like this too clever by half, like self-congratulatory, like, hey, beep, beep, we're doing this thing. And like, and at times, at its worst, I felt the people versus George Lucas was doing the same thing. You know, and it's just, it's a sort of self-flagellating, like, aren't we cool for standing up to the man?
For
like,
having an opinion about this.
Yeah.
And I say this as a person who had a strong opinion about all of this for a very long time.
Totally.
Yeah. But no, just
that part of my brain had an aneurysm and died. Like,
get the
I can't
fuck over yourself.
Seriously. Yeah, yeah. I can't. It's like some people have that happen and they can't see or remember colors. That's happened to me, and now I can't
see or remember caring about Star
Wars
anymore.
It's just gone.
The man who mistook Star Wars for sucking.
There's so many different ways to approach the idea in a fresh way, and like I said, presentation is a huge part of it, and the structure is a huge part of it. I nothing pisses me off more than people thinking that I'll just do interviews and B-roll and it's a document. No, it's not a documentary.
It's a story. It still has to be a story.
You have to tell a story. You have to come to a conclusion. There has to be a growth. There has to be an arc. And you do this huge thing. And like you said, the last 5 minutes is all like, I still love George.
Yeah.
You know, don't hate me. Like, it tried to
pull up from the nosedive to be like, oh, well, you know, we're showing all the different perspectives. And ultimately it's from a
and
place.
And it just
love
cut out its own heels from underneath.
Yeah, it didn't.
Yeah, if you're going to position it as the people versus George Lucas, it's like, well, what's the verdict?
Where's the verdict?
I guess it's for us to decide. They've presented the case for us, I suppose.
The verdict is hope for the future.
Yes.
Fuck off.
The verdict is everyone's a person in their own way.
But I mean,
everybody's special.
We had this conversation a couple of episodes ago, though, in a more general sense about the responsibility of a storyteller to the audience and the relationship and the, like, again, something that they touched on the precipice of, the idea of participatory creativity, you know, stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff to be said there.
Yeah.
There's a lot
of questions there, and there's a lot of like questions just to be asked that we may not even have the answer for, but here's something to think about.
Yeah. A creator, I think the verdict we came to on that is like, it's great if a creator has the kind of wisdom to leverage that creative participation on the part of, you know, a fan base that really loves it. And George is halfway there in that he doesn't stop it. You know, he doesn't step in and set his foot down.
Well, I think we said this on other commentaries where, I mean, whatever you want to say about George in this kind of debate, you have to give the man immense amount of credit for letting other people play in a sandbox, right. Yeah. And that's the reason all four of us are in this room.
Yeah. Yeah.
The difference is that so many people are like, there's the line that George or anyone else, any other reasonable person doesn't cross is, yeah, it's, I hear that you didn't like the new versions I did. I'm not going to actually change what I'm doing because you didn't like it. You are free to not buy a ticket. Meanwhile, I'll give you the world. You do stuff.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. you feel free. There's some new project coming out now. There's some, I don't know if it's a TV show or whatever, but that's it's going to have a whole online complement to it where the audience participation will actually drive the direction of the show. And I'm like, well, that's going to suck
be awful.
Hard. That's going to suck hard.
Yeah. Heroes are going to be overpowered.
That sounds like a great idea.
Wait till 4chan gets a hold of your chat room. Right. Wait till your show turns into whatever.
Wait until Stephen Colbert decides to pollute that poll.
You know, it's like... Something has to have a creative, you know, some kind of creative vision to it. If it's just mobocracy, then it's going to be like, I want blue explosions. And okay, I guess that's what that is, you know. Yeah. And so it just becomes this random, you know, it's a pizza with everything on it. It's like you can have a pizza with anything on it. I guess if you like, you know, all that stuff, then that's great.
If you want a boot on your pizza, exactly, I guess we'll do it.
You can't discern individual flavors.
But, you know, Wolfgang Puck isn't going to go, yeah, I created that. It's a pizza with every fucking thing on it. That's not creativity. That's just throwing stuff at something. It's like, yeah, George Lucas made some what we agree and the documentary points out and makes a pretty good case for some poor creative choices in some of the things he did. And they, you know,
I think we should go into this more. Hang on.
Somebody in the chat room brought it up where
I thought we would love
there. There is a sense of, and this is the part, this is about the part that the documentary goes into it a little bit, that some people say, you know, it's okay to, hey, look, you made movies and not everyone liked them, and that's, you know, your job as an artist is to make the thing, and it's the job of the audience to either like it or not, but that's kind of the whole relationship. Someone took him to task for a bit of the revisionist history of, well, but these new ones are always for kids. And as someone pointed out and someone brought up in the chat room and reminded me, is then they go right to a guy going, then how come it starts with paragraphs talking about trade embargoes and trade routes? He goes, because I had to explain that to my kids and they still don't understand what any of that means.
Honestly, that's the thing that keeps, like, annoying me. It's like I'm done, like, being upset about Star Wars in general, but every time he comes out and lies about it, that's what gets my ire up.
It's like, if you just go, oh, you didn't like that, okay, that's a bummer,
but yeah, exactly,
sorry. But I'm still rich,
yeah,
well, you win.
Part of the reason why the movie angers me so is that in the process of doing what it's doing, it's actually working against its own interests, because it makes its argument so poorly. It actually gives George the opportunity to say, well, those fans are just, they're just fickle, and they're just, look at them. They're just, you know, they whine and complain about everything. Like, in so many
and
words.
And no one made them buy it. Right.
He has a very good point. But at the end of the day, it's like, Red Letter Media exploded when people like Damon Lindelof, Patton Oswalt were saying, wow, this is a very well done, articulate takedown of episode one. Same thing with the guy who did the What If. That got retweeted by some very famous people. Like, this is really smart. You should listen to this. If you are going to come out, but he's not going to point out Red Letter Media. He's not going to point out that kid. He's going to point to a documentary like People versus George Lucas and go, well, just look, they're all just look at how they're behaving.
Yeah.
Look at the level of discourse. And of course they're going to not like it. And because of that, all of us who have a legitimate issue or like a well-articulated thought about why
a stake in this ongoing debate.
Exactly. The argument suffers as a whole because of a poorly made point.
This is the awful cable political debate version of something that we're trying to talk seriously about, if we're trying to talk about it at all. I have a question for you, though, Eddie. What do you think the point the filmmaker was trying to make was? What do you think his opinion is?
I don't think he knew.
I think he used this as like a form of catharsis, I guess. I think he just had all these things that needed to be said, and he wanted to have people say them. And as a result, it's wildly unfocused like that. I say this from experience. It's hard to make a documentary. Like, I made a feature-length documentary while I was still in school, and guess what? It looks like a documentary made still in school.
He wanted us to
participate
to give an interview. We never got a chance to do it.
Ryan and me too.
Yeah.
He sent questions, and there's no discernible theme.
I think he pretty much contacted through Adam pretty much everyone who was Adam winner, because I got it too. I got the request too for my Adam account, and I read it, and I was already, because this movie was happening for quite some time.
Yeah,
I was already aware of it, and I kind of already had a sense, like, well, it just feels like it's going to be a polemic about, yeah, prequels suck, and it's like I was interested in going on, you know, being interviewed for it, because I would want to say, yeah, the prequels suck. George Lucas doesn't owe us anything, though. You know, it's just, hey, he made some good movies. He made some movies that we don't like so much. That's it. That's all. There's nothing else to be angry about.
Period. End of line.
Unfortunately, some people, there are a couple of people in the documentary that they did interview who do say that, and they do have that in there, which is good, where they go, look, he made some movies you like. He made some movies you don't. Eat a cookie. Go to bed, for fuck's sake. Yeah. I mean, that's it. Yeah. That's how that goes.
I have a slight disagreement from people who say he doesn't owe us anything, just in the sense where I'm like, well, he owes me $12 worth of fucking entertainment for 2 hours. Yeah, he owes me that.
I agree with that.
You know?
Yeah, that's fair. But then, you know, it's like, but he doesn't owe you a personal apology, and he doesn't owe you, like, oh, I'll recut that right away for you, sir. Yeah,
he doesn't owe you a story he's incapable of providing.
He doesn't owe us reparations. Is the idea. And that's, it's not
a punitive thing we're looking for now.
It carries that kind of
sense of entitlement.
That sense, for some of these people. And again, I will include my previous version of myself in that group.
The one that now we have to be ashamed is out there.
Yeah,
just like George Lucas has to be ashamed of.
But it's like it's these you almost get this feeling that people want reparations for their childhood.
Yeah.
No, I think
that at the end where they were talking about, of course, they have to go into the George Lucas rape my childhood thing. It's like, no, what George Lucas disillusioned you. It's like when you saw your dad cry for the first time. It's like, oh, he's a person. He's not a Superman who can do no wrong. You know, that's what Phantom Menace really was.
That's exactly what it is.
George Lucas can do wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, someone in the chat was asking, does anyone know if George has seen it? I'm actually not interested in that question. What I'm really interested in is
he's working on George Lucas versus the people.
Yeah. I'm actually really interested.
That would be all the product lines.
Yes.
He wins.
He launched an assault. He wins.
It's not difficult to imagine Joss Whedon complexly, because he's obviously a very thoughtful guy. And I think he knows. I think he understands this on both sides of it very well. And I don't think it would worry him. But I would be interested to hear what he had to say about something like this. Mm. And if specifically, and I don't know if it's something. He would not want to say this publicly, even if he had reservations. But I wonder if it freaks him out at all. Because now all these people in this movie own a Joss is my master now shirt. And I wonder if he would look at this and go, God, these people are insane. I don't know if this is going to work.
I think
I'm really worried. I'm like, what is my army?
Well, the backlash has already begun.
When will the crowd turn on me?
The backlash has already begun, because someone I think it was started in the diff website chat. Someone said that there are already people who are like getting their hipster cred ready by going, Joss is dead to me because he did the Avengers. You know, when Joss was cool and did, you know, really cool, edgy, weird stuff, he was awesome. But now he's totally sold out and he's gone mainstream.
Cabin in the Woods came out a month ago.
And fuck that guy. Yeah.
Didn't he start off at Roseanne? Like
that was his first
paid gig was writing for Roseanne.
Yeah. So,
I
think it's a different scenario, because I think Joss is self-aware enough. And also,
I think Joss actually feels that he does have
cut to when Joss makes the turd.
Yeah. I'm not saying he can't, or he's infallible or whatever, but I think he is more in tune with being a fanboy of things himself. He's more attuned to, just from hearing him speak, he strikes me as being more attuned to someone who appreciates that there is a give and take between him and the audience. Like, I think he feels that he does owe the audience something to a certain degree. He owes them a certain level of competence and respect and bringing something, whereas George Lucas is more like, well, I'm going to put something on the screen and call it Star Wars, and you can buy it or not. Whereas Joss comes at it like, if I'm going to put something on the screen and call it Avengers, I got to do my fucking best.
I think even moreover, or at least in addition to that, is I think Joss would know how to talk about it afterwards.
Sure.
I think he would know how to be like,
this is why I made these decisions.
Not even
he had to do for Serenity. I saw him in person take a quick, why did you kill Wash? Even though I knew it would make you mad, here's why I did that.
But I mean, even beyond like explaining his creative decisions and having an argument or a debate about the validity of them, even if he made something that was just fucking really bad, what if he made, you know, something like Brothers Grimm or something that everyone just hated, Van Helsing or something like that, I think he wouldn't
I mean, he still dogs Waterworld, but he's like, but I really like Waterworld. I think there's some stuff in Waterworld that's great. But he knows how to talk about it, so it doesn't make people go, that guy's lost his fucking mind. Which is, it might even just be that he talks to fans more than George does. Maybe George has that going on too. I don't know, but I wonder what happens if Joss watches this. I'm sure he just goes, yep. Oh boy, these are my people. Oh God.
I think it boils down to a sense of entitlement on both ends. I think there's a sense of entitlement on fans that go, yeah, you raped my child and he owes me $1 billion for it. But I also think there's a sense of entitlement on George Lucas's side in the sense of, I'm George Lucas. I will put Star Wars on it, and I will make $2 billion, and you will buy it because, yeah. And it doesn't.
And if only he'd been wrong.
Not to say that he's not wrong, but the difference is between Lucas and Whedon. Whedon, I don't think, has that same kind of sense of entitlement where he wakes up in the morning and he goes, "Okay, I got to do an honest day's work and do my best."
Yeah,
as a storyteller, and. Lucas is a very hardworking man, but not as a storyteller. I mean, that much is absolutely clear.
And they even touch on that in the documentary. They talk about how when he made the original Star Wars, you know, he didn't make it by himself. You know, his wife was there, and you know, other people going, "That's not so good. Maybe you should think about something else." They literally emphasize, and he emphasizes about how this new trilogy, it's just me. Yeah. And they have him himself saying, mm-hmm. "It's just me." It's like, that's the problem. This is exactly what, you know, he made exactly what he wanted to make, and he loves it. Because it's exactly what he wanted to make. And who of us, no one in this room would say any difference. Like, I got to make exactly the thing I wanted to make. It's exactly, I had to tweak it until I was completely happy with it. And everything was fantastic about it. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. He's done it. He's done it since. We forget. He made that other thing called Red Tails, which he also tweaked for 5 years until it was perfect and exactly what he wanted.
But it tanked because
it didn't have the brand name on it. And he was shocked. But it's like Star Wars would not. You know,
he was shocked, and he said on Daily Show, it's because there are no white leads.
Yeah, of course. It's like you made three not very good movies, and because they were Star Wars, and because literally generations of humans were born and bred to want to go to the theater to see that, that's why those movies are popular. It's not because they were any good.
The other thing that I think is sort of bears mentioning, on top of everything else, when we say what the differentiates Joss from George. Joss, little known fact, he communicates regularly with his film professors from Wesleyan. Like, he communicates regularly, like, before a project, he'll speak to, there's one woman in particular he speaks to, where he says, okay, I'm doing this, I'm thinking it's this kind of story, what do you think? And she'll recommend, like, old classic movies that fucking, I haven't even heard of, that says, okay, use this as a reference point, use this as a reference point. He invites criticism, he invites,
Neil Patrick Harris,
which makes everything better by a percentage of four. But he invites discourse and discussion, and George very clearly doesn't, and you can see it even in like the episode one stuff. So I agree. George invites a lot of this on him himself. There's no doubt.
Joss famously, or well, not really famously, but it's probably going to become a Today I Learned topic on Reddit a bunch of times, but Joss worked on Toy Story, and helped kind of make it what it was. And from what I understand, he actually kind of helped create that environment at Pixar.
Andrew talks about that.
Yeah, where they're constantly going, they get into a room and it's like, okay, this is your movie. You'll do it your way, but let's throw in other ideas. You don't have to have all the ideas. You just decide which ones you're going to use. And that, you know, takes everything up a level. And I think as long as you're willing to as long as you are a filmmaker like Joss Whedon currently is, at least, or a filmmaker like George Lucas was forced to be when he was making Star Wars, who has to kind of accept and assimilate and synthesize a bunch of different perspectives and choose the best and not just yours, I think that's a way to move forward. But once the egotism gets in, once the idea of I am the creator and what I say goes gets in, that's when you can enter an echo chamber and not, you don't know whether or not you're making something good or not. Some people can enter that echo chamber and make amazing things, and it's like, well, no wonder they don't listen to anyone else. But for the most part,
it's not good for any sense of rationality.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're at a point where you cannot tell the difference. It's so close to your face, you're like, I don't know if this is good or not. Right. You have to ask someone.
Which I think, to bring it back, I think is part of the problem that the documentary itself falls into, because I don't think there was a lot of criticism, self-criticism. Oh,
that's probably true.
I think,
I mean, it's speculate, but I think that there's a big echo chamber quality to the documentary itself.
To the documentary,
all of these people. Itself,
yeah.
Well, a lot of, you know, just that this kind of people, and we are part of that group, but of just going back and forth between each other, going, yeah, fucking Jar Jar, yeah, fucking Greedo shooting first, going back and forth, and maybe not enough people stepping in from the outside and going, but what's really worth talking about here? What's really worth asking?
The Jar Jar thing, like when that was going on, I was almost, like you were saying, I almost wanted someone else to come in and kind of point out, because like Red Letter Media being, you know, the very popular Episode One takedown, he mentions Jar Jar in passing like twice.
Yeah.
You know, Jar Jar is not the like fulcrum of the problem. And it's like, I would have liked someone to come in and say, people couldn't articulate what was wrong with Episode One, so they fixated on the one thing that was clearly wrong, and Jar Jar became this demonized thing where it's like, but he's not really the problem here.
Right.
You
right.
just can't articulate what the real problem
is. It's not like
is.
If you sliced him, if you rotored him out of the frame, the movie would suddenly be better, but yeah, it's
yeah,
a good...
Yeah, it certainly is improved.
A
he's improved by being removed.
The Phantom Edit has
yes.
less Jar Jar,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
So that helps.
I think the
it's not like he saved the film either.
Yeah.
Thank God
for Jar Jar, otherwise that movie would suck.
They always say in a movie that the editing is, you know, like the like half the movie on just on a narrative film. In documentary it's more like 65% is the editing. And I think part of the problem, and again I recognize it because I've committed these sins early in my career. When you go to interview someone for a documentary or for any sort of nonfiction programming, too often what happens is you interview somebody says something really funny or really good at that moment that sticks in your head. And that's what echoes is that moment. So you get into the edit and you're like, well, oh, this guy's interview is great. He says X, Y, and Z that are really funny. Put those in the timeline now. And those will just stay. Those are just immutable. Those will stay no matter what. But as the film starts to take shape, a lot of times, I felt this watching this, is that there's quote funny or memorable lines from various people, Chris Gore especially, I think he like gets really amused with himself, that to me the moments that felt most out of place were, and like, oh, that was an assembly cut, like that was an assembly, that's a leftover from the assembly cut, and the rest of this scene was sort of built around these three or four lines, and as the movie evolves and you change and you trim and you edit, those just stayed there, they didn't go anywhere. And it again seems to me, because only because I've done it, you need to have somebody else, like a critical editor, say, no, this scene sucks.
What's the point? Why is this here?
Why is this here?
Yeah.
In the context of the scene, again, going back to merch, how does this shot fit into the scene? How does the scene fit into the sequence? How does the sequence fit into the film? How does the film fit into the world? You have to be aware of all those things in every single cut.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you get clumps of scene like material, but there's no scenes in this.
But there's no through line. There's nothing that carries us from one moment to the next, one scene to the next.
No, just
one
someone
sequence.
Talking about Greedo will luckily say something about Jar Jar, and that leads into the conversation.
The only thing it's just sort of chronological. It sort of starts with, here's George Lucas' early years, then he made Star Wars, then there was Star Wars Fandom, and then he finally came out with the expanded editions, and then they did the prequels, and then people were pissed about the prequels. The end. So which is, you know, at least that's a kind of structure. It's the obvious kind of structure. It also had, like, a couple times, it had, like, four times, as I recall, it had, like, title cards that would say, like, there was, like, you know, the...
Chapter 4 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
The episode 4, The Aftermath, or something like that.
Where's
like, they would just sort of arbitrarily show up, and I didn't, like, feel like I had seen a cohesive act. Oh, yeah. I see. That thought
I don't remember those at all.
That
I
thought
do.
Has been... Awful. There's at least four of them. Like,
there's
the
four of them,
the fourth
one
showed up toward the end, and I'm like... Oh, so
we're done now?
Yeah, the movie seems to think it has created these blocks of cohesiveness.
And it wasn't even Exhibit A, Exhibit B, cross-examination, none of that. It was just like, you know, titles like The Return or something like that.
Didn't even follow the courtroom theme that they were sort of trying to...
A good example of this is Who Killed the Electric Car? Because that
which is a great documentary.
It's a great documentary. It is a polemic.
Yes.
But it's a documentary, but... Who killed the electric car? What does it do? Suspect one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what does it ultimately do? It arrives at a point. It goes through all the contributing factors before revealing the biggest one, which is what? The people. The people didn't pursue buying an electric car, therefore there's no market for it, therefore it dies. It arrives at a point, and it has many interesting stops along the way, but it builds to its conclusion.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And to me, the biggest, and I've said the biggest probably five or six times now, so what the fuck am I saying? But the thing that kept standing out to me is, what was the connective tissue between these big, like, beats? Clips of fan films or fan works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just like
a lot of clips of fan films.
It was like, okay, clearly you're interviewing these people and this is obviously their work on
scene. And you got an open door policy from the Star Wars Uncut guy, because a lot of that was Star Wars Uncut.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. And not only that, but it smacked to me of like, these guys are my buddies now, so I'm going to throw their work into it so people will see how brilliant they are.
There was definitely.
Hey, it didn't suck that Mike was in it.
No, I'm just saying. What?
Yeah. I wish I'd responded to those guys just to get some Pink Five clips in there.
But
now that it's become a thing.
But
now that it's a movie that people are
watching. That's worse than like trade outs to me. Like when I have to include someone drinking a can of Dr. Pepper in a scene. That's what it feels like to me. And like, and in a documentary where you're espousing artistic integrity, like it's just cronyism. Like,
that is absolutely something that was conscious, because if you look behind the talking heads on everybody or the shirts that they're wearing, in every case, is it Bryn? Is the science fiction author? He's got all of his books
posed
right there.
That was I'll do your interview. Yeah, sure.
But and then everybody's got their shirt with their website, and it's like, it's totally valid. You got to hustle to make your living. But yeah, as Eddie said, when supposedly the point, the thing that you're railing against is this crass commercialism destroying artistic integrity, you're not doing a whole lot to make your own case there.
I have a weird little different direction if we're done sort of on that line of thinking.
I just have one question that probably bears asking. We don't necessarily have to address it, but is there any irony in being like, hey, guy who made a documentary about how George Lucas should have done something differently, shut up, mind your own business, you should have done it differently. Like,
well, actually, that's where I was about to go.
Okay.
That's about where I was going to go. Because we live in a really strange time where we just get together and we hang out in my house in front of microphones and talk about people like they're not here, and then sometimes they end up hearing it.
Yeah.
Now, there's a chance that the guy who made this movie is going to find this on some blog reel, or blog rule, pull it up, listen to it, maybe probably not get this far.
Yeah.
But one of the things he might say is, well, this movie wasn't for you. Do you think that's true?
It's for kids.
I mean,
that was my first argument. It's like, it's, you know, we live in that little insular world where it's like you know, if you name any special interest group, like if you saw a documentary about figure skating, when you go, well, they just scratched the surface, they talked about all the obvious things. That's because it wasn't for people who know figure skating intimately.
Yeah.
It's for people who don't know about this stuff. You could say that that's all it was for.
But are we so far, us, the four of us, the five, nine of us, whatever, I can't count. Are we so far through the looking glass that this is focused on a subset of fans? And we're even in a subset of them who are like, get over it. Because we know all the same things that the people that are whining on the movie do.
We are being
But we also have a contrary opinion to them, and they're supposed to be the subject.
That's so 2004 to hate George Lucas.
Yeah, I mean, there is a hipster quality of like, oh, I hated the special editions before everybody hated the special editions. And
now I don't anymore.
It's so played out to hate the special editions.
I hate them so much, I don't even hate them.
The only truth that you can take away is that it is impossible to not be an asshole.
Yeah.
He's an asshole. We're an asshole. We're all assholes.
We're assholes just pointing at each other.
And okay. Yes. But it. Go ahead.
I just want.
I think it's, again, what we've done as opposed to, you know, as opposed to perhaps the what we're complaining about in this documentary, what we've done here is not just be like, we haven't just sat here and gone, oh, it's totally played out, oh, you know, get over it, stop talking about Jar Jar, stop talking. We have addressed how it's not well constructed, it's not bringing its thesis very clearly. Like, we've actually, like you said, even in this, I feel like we have brought something more constructive to, not, you know, not to the actual film itself. He can't change his film, and we are not demanding that he does.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, we've brought something to the table saying, you know, for people who are looking to make documentaries, here is how this is a case study of how, in our opinion, it doesn't necessarily work.
That's exactly my point.
I think there is something to be said about even if it's not directed, you know, even if it's not for us, even if it feels very superficial and just barely scratching the surface, there is a version of this, like we've said, where it's like, okay, there's a lot more to it than that, but that covered the basics pretty well. Whereas this doesn't feel like it's covering any basics. It's just like you said, clumps of people complaining about, yes, a specific topic.
And, yeah, and that's, and again, the main motivating factor behind my strong dislike of this movie is that it is from that. I feel as passionately about other documentaries that don't fail. The fact that of all, it's like, if you're gonna make a documentary, you've got to come correct. Just like you, when you make any movie, you've got to know exactly what you're in for and know narratively what you have to do to communicate your point. If you're going to make a documentary about why the prequels suck, it is double uphill battle.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or anything that is borderline cliched. If you're going to make a documentary about the Holocaust, if you're going to make a documentary about why the movie rating system is bad, things that have been talked about and bandied about a lot already. You know, and yes, I understand it's an insular world, but it's been already talked about for a while. If you're going to do topics that have had a lot of discussion behind it, and you're going to do a documentary about it, you've really got to do something smart.
It's got to be, well, it's got to be introspective, as opposed to, you know, we've talked about these topics for a decade now. It's like,
good,
oh,
God,
let's just, yeah, I know.
Actually, more than that.
More
nobody
than
panic.
That.
Well, it's special editions. I mean,
yeah.
Christ almighty.
Yeah,
but anyway.
It's we've been in a special edition world for 15 years now, post-special edition world. But, you know, there's a
that's
level
how nerds do ADBC.
Yeah.
It's just,
there's a level at which it's like, okay, these things have been talked about ad nauseum. What conclusions have been drawn? We've talked about them enough. What are the conclusions of these conversations? What can we say? Or looking back on all of these decades of conversations, what, like you say, we keep using the word point. Like, that's just what's missing. What point have these things come to? What point have we drawn from them? What's the point that we can,
and what are we taking?
Yeah,
it's
what's the point that we can take from the fact that these arguments keep happening, and what's the ultimate result of these arguments? Has there been a result? And you know, kind of taking a broad perspective and saying, okay, everyone's made these arguments. Like we said before, it's got a whole courtroom thing, but it's got no verdict. It's just got a series of arguments.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting is I had a little bit of holdout hope, and I didn't. Eddie really disliked the movie. I didn't really mind the movie, but I wasn't paying that close of attention to it either. But I was a little holding out hopey about it because it actually has the title of a different documentary that I think would have been really interesting, where it's not, you know, the people versus George Lucas were in it, but more like a case study. Mm-hmm. What's going on with the people versus George Lucas thing?
Yeah.
What is the inherent issue between these individuals and that guy? Not, I'm one of...
Yes,
not,
yes.
It, yeah. This documentary that we got could have been called Us versus George Lucas.
Yes.
I want to see the people versus George Lucas as like a sociological thing.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's almost like early on in the film, they do a thing. There's actually message boards about people who don't like the thing. It's like, I'd like to meet that person. Uh-huh. I'd like to meet the person or the person who loves the original trilogy. I'd like to meet that person, spend some time
or the
in
prequels,
their life.
Yeah.
Or the prequel. I'd like to see, spend some time with that person in their life. Parallel it with somebody
they have
else's.
To buy milk just like us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but
yeah, they shouldn't get married. That's where I draw the line. They should not be allowed to marry.
I mean, you know, again, you know, what does Kirby Dick do in this film is not yet rated? He brings up the point that you know, heterosex versus homosexual sex depicted on screen, homosexual sex gets the NC-17 rating infinitely more. The private investigators that he follows, or that he films following around the actual members of the MPAA, happens to be gay and are in a committed relationship. So he connects the bridge there between this verite footage of this, of these people's lives, and connects it to a larger, oh my God, theme of what it is, of really, you know, the fact that the movie's about the MPAA board is actually just a larger statement about our society and,
sure,
and all this other stuff. It just does it through the lens of the rating system. What does looking through the lens of Star Wars tell us about ourselves, you know, or about culture or society? Make a point. Make a stab,
yes,
at it. It doesn't have to land. Just throw something in that direction, yeah, other than Greedo shot first.
So, yeah, something about, you know, something about, is, since, I'm a human, sorry, being, and this is how I relate to other human beings, and this is how other human beings relate to me, and this is how I do it well, or this is how these people do it well, or this is how these people how these people don't do it well. And here's an example of maybe how we can do it better or how we should not do it. That, to me, is think is at the heart of any story is here's a story about a human being and how they deal with other human beings, either in a good way or a bad way. Go.
An artifact of us having five people on mic is that me and Eddie are sharing a mic, so I just have it on the boom arm and it's swiveling. And every time Eddie finishes a sentence, he does the spinning equivalent of drop the mic, where he just spins it back at my face, and it just goes like, boom.
Over to you.
The poetry slam up in here.
What you got?
Yeah, go. It's like that's what you got to do. And he just instead of dropping the mic, he pushes it. Anyway,
he swings it at you.
Oh, what's gonna happen is this episode is gonna be called the people versus George Lucas.
Us versus the people of George versus.
Was this I guess we've already come down on a verdict on this subject. There was a interesting documentary to be made with this intention and with this access.
Yes,
right?
I mean you can make a documentary about. I mean you could make a documentary about the idea of. Stuff they touched on, the idea of participatory culture and how that's becoming more so, and you know, Facebook, and you have to live with your past a lot more than even not a creative person has to live with his past more.
The Great Onion article from last week is that no one is eligible to be president in 2040 yeah. because of their Facebook pages.
Well, I mean, the stuff you guys are talking about is way more interesting to me than the film I saw.
Right, but exactly. Well, those pieces were there, but they weren't.
And even just a conversation about.
They weren't. There was no overarching.
There was no connection.
What do these people think George did to them? That question.
Yeah. See, the angle that I would. You know, seeing the material kind of all assembled like that. And again, I didn't hate the documentary. I thought it just, it was just sort of a very, you know, no point of view. And it's like that we've had the argument before, like, well, documentary maybe shouldn't have a point of view. It should just present ideas and facts and go, okay, you decide, which is the route they took on this one. But what I always get fascinated about is where does that sense of entitlement come from? And where is this weird sense of George Lucas is my hero and now I hate him and I despise him but I love him still. I mean
I have a thought
see
about
I would
that.
Like
I would love
like,
to for
I want to like
to ask those people those
I
questions
I want to like tie that into the, like you know the Campbellian heroes like because we all we want heroes in our lives and Star Wars touched on that and George became our hero in real life because he made this amazing thing but then we want to tear him down and hate him and no now he has failed us he is no longer our hero
this is but really he, I mean
but he kept doing the same thing he was doing before you just didn't like you didn't like the damsel he saved from the burning building that time. You like the other damsel better, but now you hate your hero. And what's that about? And where's that coming from?
This sounds very anti-nerd. It sounds pejorative and rude. But I wonder if this is all an artifact of the fact that the people that really loved Star Wars, really really loved Star Wars into adulthood, are nerds. Are potentially. Okay, fine. Emotionally stunted people. People who may or may not have had the breadth of life experience and who may or may not, for you know, good or bad reasons, really focus intently on certain things that they love because they're nerds. That's just how it works. And when it breaks, it hurts more because there's not the sense of perspective. If your entire room is decorated with Star Wars toys, it's not a hard argument to make that you're a little focused on something one way or another.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, sure.
I wonder
right.
if it's just... We are...
If you're in a relationship, your breakup affects you way more than it affects me, you know? I'm gonna look at it and be like, wow, it sucks that you're sad, and that she was really a bitch right there at the end. But it's not gonna destroy me.
By the way, I have a bunch of Star Wars figs. I'm totally a part of that.
A friend of mine said to me years ago, and actually it kind of applies here as I was pouring my heart out to him about my breakup at the time. And he just, you know, this is a phone conversation, and he just listened. I'm waiting for him to like go, dude, yeah, I totally understand. That's so rough, you know, boy, I really feel for you. And I laid it all out there, and he said, well. I envy you this opportunity for growth. And I wanted to strangle him. I was like, but then it's like, it's the same thing. It's like, oh, George Lucas made a movie you didn't like, and suddenly you feel differently about Star Wars. I envy you this opportunity for growth.
Because which is a very simple way of saying grow the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is like, so I think you maybe learned a little, maybe you'll reexamine your life now a little bit.
Right.
That, you know, that maybe you shouldn't have been so invested in a fucking movie.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a lot of my. The thing that always sets me off, and obviously down in front, you know, is a testament to this the many times, is when people like who aren't in the movie industry and aren't even creative people necessarily who want to say, but they should be doing this. And it's like that is so not how anything actually works. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Star Wars, a guy had a movie that was moderately successful and that gave him the clout to try an experimental crazy movie. And he had a guy at a studio, Alan Ladd, who said, fuck it, that kid, give him the money and let's just see what the hell happens. And it became a thing. That's it.
That's it.
That's all Star Wars is.
He was.
It's
never...
just a thing that happened to hit the zeitgeist at the right time, and it's fun.
It wasn't handed down from Mount Sinai.
And we all love it. Yes, exactly. It is not the fucking Ten Commandments. It's a guy who made a movie, and then he made another one that was actually kind of okay, and then he made a third one that really
wasn't that great.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's like, and then he made some more that weren't so good. And life went on the next day. Right. That's all
the sun came up. Yeah. The world kept turning.
The breakup analogy is a good one because, like, when you've cohabitated and you've lived with someone, and then the relationship ends, and then suddenly, you know, there, regardless of who ends it, suddenly there's a bunch of their shit still around that you still have to see. It's like all the toy collectors. It's like George Lucas. The secret is, kids, George Lucas was never that great. And he's
and
not
he was never that into
bad.
You.
And he's never that into
he's
you.
He's just not that
he,
into you.
He is your first love.
He really is.
The first thing he did was build a big fence to keep you out.
But guess what?
You had the money.
But I'll say this. I'll put it to you. You weren't that good to him either. You know what I mean? Like, it's because he was never. It's not fair to him that you built him up that way.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's like when you're setting this undue expectation to him, and I think Joss is just a little bit more aware of it. Joss has had his heart broken a few too many times. Yeah. So he's like, guys, that's why he's always so self-effacing. He's like, seriously, I'm not that, like, you know, I try, I'm just a guy. And, like, George Lucas, I think maybe he self-perpetuated that myth a bit. I think part of it is that because he retreated after Jedi for so long. He went Howard Hughes and he let the Wonka myth.
I've seen it. It's amazing. I'd live there, too, if I could.
Totally. He let the Wonka myth sort of build and because of it, like, it just he allowed his fans to set these undue expectations on him. But again, if you go back and watch THX 1138 and even parts of American Graffiti, there's some shit wrong with those movies. And, like, they work mostly, they're good movies. I love THX 1138, but it's a little rough in parts, and it was never like he was never that great to begin with. Just the right alchemy allowed Star Wars to happen.
Yeah,
and
he got lucky. He literally, I mean, he even says, especially in his early movies, now he's like, oh yeah, I had a plan since I was a fetus and whatever. But like, but
yeah, it's like, dude, you're buying your own press.
Yeah, exactly. But at the time, he would totally say, like, this happened by accident. Like, I don't know how to tell a story. I never even wanted to tell a story. I just thought this would be neat, and I accidentally told the story, and everyone fell in love with it. You know, even at the time.
And the other thing about that is, like, that's fine. It's like, if any one of us, like, get the end of our life, you look back and go, well, I did make that one movie that became a worldwide phenomenon that's still part of the public consciousness to this day. Then I did some other stuff that was crap. It's like, yeah, but the first thing
I call that
is
a win.
Yeah, exactly. That's fine.
These days,
there's like you and Shakespeare and Louis Pasteur and that's Martin Luther King. I mean, you're in that zone of, like,
and by the way, just a strange thought, and we're at an hour, we should wrap it up, but a strange thought I've had, and I would not want George to start playing the victim card, because bitch, please, but if he just came out in one interview, just one time, one YouTube clip, 25 million views, if the interviewer said, so you're going to do more Star Wars? And George just went, fuck you! Once. I'd be like, I think we're even. I think we know what's up.
He said that a couple. Well,
you all.
No, but, like, straight up, do you realize what my life has been like for the last 10 years?
Well, come on. No sympathy on that front, because the man has multiple times said, no, I'm done with Star Wars. No more Star Wars. Right. And we still have Star Wars coming out the crapper every day.
He made
Star Wars Underground.
He did
Star Wars Clone Wars Volume 7. The Wars of the Clones.
The Clonians.
The closest I think he ever got to that was in some interview. I think even on one of the Star Wars things. He basically said, you know, Star Wars isn't something that I, like, love. I like Star Wars.
But
I don't love Star Wars. Yeah. Like, he said it flat out. He's like, this is not the thing that I wanted to spend the rest of my career doing, but here I am.
Again, relationship-wise, it's like, when I'm in town, we can hang out.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoy being with you, but I live in Marin, man. I can't be here all the time for you. So,
anyway, so... verdict?
I think our conversation here was more cathartic about the thing than about the topic of fandom versus George Lucas than the actual people.
He got his off with the movie. Just scratched the surface.
Oh yeah.
hours more to talk about this if we wanted to, which I don't.
Someone should do an actual sociological study on it, though.
Yeah.
Write a book on it.
Surely there must be. I mean, there must be out there.
Anyway, it's on Netflix streaming if you want to watch it and see what we've been talking about this whole time.
Let's see 2 seconds of Mike and Dorkman.
Right in the beginning there.
And usually, and it's actually, you mainly
and look
see
for
me.
All of us.
Usually it's Ryan that gets the clip for some reason. But
And look for all of us in the upcoming Fan Films documentary, Backyard Blockbusters.
Yes,
Oops.
Indeed.
which you can find the trailer for. It's already
well,
out.
And again, there's almost like...
There's interviews with me and Trey.
There's the compulsion for like revisionism or whatever where I'm like, oh man, that was like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, that is not... Probably not my opinion anymore. Like, I don't know if I want that interview
special
in there,
edition.
But whatever.
Yeah,
special edition. Just dub me over.
The Backyard Blockbusters Holiday Special.
Yeah.
And what's crazy for me is I didn't even... Fenn sent me the trailer link when he was, like, putting it together. And he's like, here's the thing. And I was like, oh, yeah, I did this. I can't remember... Did I even say anything cool? And I play the trailer, and there's an interview with... It starts off with a little thingy, and then it goes to an interview clip with Harry Knowles. And then it cuts to this little asshole with red hair. Right there. I'm like, okay. Now I'm really scared.
Yeah.
I really want to know what I said.
Yeah.
Anyway, until next week.
So if you're listening to this, John, make sure it has a point of view and isn't just a bunch of fun clips.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're going to take you to school when you get out.
Anyway.
Even though it's all us.
This has been Down in Front. You can always find more episodes at downinfront.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Get a brand new episode every single week. Buy our stuff. Buy our shirts. Give us money for stuff. Go to the forum. It's good stuff. Twitter, Down in Front. Facebook, Down in Front Show. Email us at downinfrontshow@gmail.com. My name is T. Christie.
Drop the mic.
Ow.
Brian Finifter.
Mike Scott.
Seriously, Han shot first. I mean, come on.
Oh, come on.
Han shot alone.
And this has been Down in Front. Thank you much for listening. Good night. Good night. Ba-dum, 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 ba-dum.
Free domain.